Pete Street Beat is a special program on CHUO 89.1 FM, featuring interviews conducted by Pete Cassidy. Pete was an outreach worker who helped people on the street through his own Street Smarts initiative. He provided direct support to people on the streets of Ottawa. Pete saw his work as a way to make amends for how much he felt he had taken from society during his days as an addict on the streets. The goal of Pete Street Beat is to profile people who are living in the streets, are in recovery, or are helping others on their road to recovery. Through the interviews he conducted, Pete hoped listeners would finally hear the voices of people who are often ignored or mistreated in society. Sadly, Pete passed away in November 2014, and we air this program in tribute to him. On this edition of Pete Street Beat, Pete speaks to Jay about his battle with addiction. Jay tells us about going into a recovery program. Plus, Pete and Jay discuss the pros and cons of recovery treatment. And Jay tells us about the life of a functioning addict. We begin this edition of the show with Jay telling us about how an illness in his family caused him to go from a model college student into a person who was addicted to prescription pills.
Hi friends, this is Pete and we're on Pete Street. I'm sitting with a friend of mine named Jay. Jay is a guy who's been dealing with his own lifestyle and his own addiction problems and his own situations, and he's here to us, sit with us tonight, and talk about his life. So why don't you say hi everybody, Jay?
Hi everyone.
In the short time we've known each other, Jay, I've learned a little bit about you. Why don't you give us a little hint about, you know, what brought you to where you are today?
Where I am now? Well, from where I was before to now, it's just a lot of hard work and never give up. I know it's hard for a lot of people to believe that type of mentality, but I try to live by one word and one word only, and that's perseverance. No matter how bad things get, you can't give up.
That's quite true. That's quite true. You know, Jay, we talked earlier. You were saying that you had kind of a sad thing happen at a point not too long ago. You lost your mom. What happened? What brought you to the? I don't want to say addiction because that kind of clouds it. But you know, you were saying that you dealt with your pain by using pills.
Correct.
You know, how long did you do that?
I started off when I was 20. I moved back home. My mom had been diagnosed with degenerative osteoporosis, very bad bone disease. So I left school. I had 6 months left in college. I just left and I decided to be her primary caregiver. The first year and a half wasn't so bad. I mean, she was starting to get a little bit worse, but once it hit the 2 year mark, that's when things started going downhill for her and downhill for myself. A brief little history about me. If anyone who knows me when I was growing up, I was very much anti-drug. I didn't smoke cigarettes. I didn't drink. I didn't do drugs till I was in my 20s.
So yeah, a relatively normal life.
I did. I mean, I grew up, average family. Well, I can't say anything bad about my childhood or anything. I had a good childhood. But what brought me to that dark place was watching, the woman who brought me to this world, a woman who took care of me when I broke my neck and I was hospitalized, a woman who took care of me when I had a severe case of chicken pox, the one person that was never too busy to listen to something I had to say. She was the strongest person I knew, and I just slowly started watching her waste away, and it was too much for me to bear. So one evening after my mom went to bed, I took a look at her pills, and I decided, well, you know, she seems to feel better. Maybe it'll help me feel better.
Pills meaning what?
OxyContin. And this is back in the heyday when it had only been out for a few years. The doctors didn't realize how bloody ridiculously addictive it was.
Oh, really?
So, no, they had no clue at the time. Because when I decided 4 years after to sober myself up, I went to a couple of detoxes and they knew virtually nothing about what I was going through. And it was really difficult for me because... Again, I wasn't someone who had, you know, lived on the street or anything like that. I'd fallen into it, and for the first, oh boy, I'd say the first year of me really trying to get sober was probably the most difficult because they just didn't know what to do with me, and I felt pretty helpless and I felt pretty alone. That no one, I couldn't talk to anyone about it. No one knew what I was going through. So
So what year was that?
That would be, so I was 20 when I started, so it would be 2004. Yes, 2004 is when I decided to get sober.
Okay.
And then my mom died a year later.
Condolences, bud.
Thanks.
Okay, well, you know, I know that oxys are an opiate derivative, you know, it's a morphine. As far as I'm not, like, I don't know, I mean, I'm not a doctor, I'm not going to try to claim to know much about it. I know that, you know, when you start, you know, prescribing opium or morphine, you know, to patients, they know exactly what it does. It you know, you become addicted to it. You know, it's a different name for the drug. So, I mean, that's just my own opinion. And it doesn't change anything, you know. I mean, they probably didn't know much about, you know, oxys, so.
All they knew, it made them a lot of money.
Yeah, it's very much a business. So in 2004, you decided to sort of clean up.
Yeah, I got to a point in my life where I basically got told by my family doctor that if I didn't stop doing what I was doing in 90 days, I was going to be dead. At the time, I weighed about 130 pounds, and I was eating 300 to 320 milligrams of OxyContin 3 or 4 times a day, and that was just to stop my shakes.
And you're a pretty small guy to begin with.
Yeah.
Huh?
So, I mean, I'm 34 now, I sit 185 pounds, but, you know, you take 40, 50 pounds off me, it was not good.
Yeah, I'm about 3 bills, and I walked into treatment, or detox, in 2000, I weighed 164, so I know fully, you know, what it's like, you know? You know, you said you lived a pretty clean life prior to this.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you also said that, you know, anybody who knew you from back then, you were like the spokesman for a clean life. How did that rack your brain, realizing that, you know, here you were one day, you know, claiming the evils of addiction, and here you are wired to, you know, one of the hardest drugs to kick.
It was that was quite an ordeal because I really didn't know anything about addiction. I didn't know really much about it. I remember when I first really started getting into it, after maybe about the 8-month mark, I didn't know what withdrawals were. And then I would try to go a day or two without, and it felt like I was dying, and I did not understand. It wasn't until I actually got told by the doctor that I needed to stop, and that he told me the symptoms that I was having were actual withdrawals. I had no clue what was going on with me or anything. But when he told me that, I went back home and I talked with my mom, and my mom knew what was going on. I wasn't stealing them from her or anything. Some people listening to this might not understand. Some people might say that, you know, my mom providing me with medication like that was a bad thing. You got to realize two things. One, when you're on that type of medication, you're not thinking straight. And two, my mom would watch me go through withdrawals, and it broke her heart. So she didn't want to see her son suffer. So that's how it all went down.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That. Yeah. So.
At least my mom got to see me sober for a year before she passed. So.
That's nice.
I went back. I went and got myself cleaned up, and then I came back for the last year that she was alive, and I was sober, and I still took care of her. So.
No, family, man, is an important thing.
It is.
Never turn your back on family.
It's amazing the way that drug use can change your body, both mentally and physically. Just one of the many topics we're covering here on Pete's Street Beat. You're listening to CHUO 89.1 FM, and we thank you for doing so. Now Jay tells us about going to treatment and how a chemical addiction can affect your brain.
At any time, did you actually do a treatment program?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Which program did you do?
I went to, I'm trying to remember the name of the place off the top of my head. I was gone for 6 months. And when I came back, I was still, what some people, you know, people listening might not understand is that when you come off of opiates, it's not something that's just simple that you stop, that your body just lets go after a while. It took me 2 years before the chemicals in my brain went back to normal. It took me 2 years before I could actually work a regular full 8-hour, 10-hour day without feeling like I was going to pass out or die.
You know, you, when I look back, and you know, I'm an addict too, right? And you know, I spent many years with a syringe in my arm. You know, withdrawals is the best cure. You know, because like you know, when the new wonder drug is Seroquel.
I like older dads. So
the new wonder drug, and they've been using it in detox for withdrawal management. Is Seroquel, and basically what they do is they put you to sleep, or they let you sleep your withdrawals away, and that's great, you know, because you don't hurt, you don't suffer, you know, you don't get in cramps, you're sleeping. But for myself personally, when I kicked in 2000, I went through withdrawals. I've been an addict for a long time. I was using IV drugs, you know, morphine, heroin, you know, anything that would get into a syringe, I used. So when I did go through the withdrawals, I was hit pretty hard.
I can imagine.
You know, so when I talk to people who say they're getting on the methadone program, I always tell them, you know,
liquid handcuffs.
Yeah, I say that's all great, you know, because now you don't have to buy your drug of choice, but all you're doing is making yourself, you know, addicted to a man-made drug, and it was man-made by the Germans for their soldiers who were coming back from the Second World War, addicted to the morphine. Just maybe you should just try going, you know, going through withdrawals and experience the pain. So it'll make you remember why you don't want to put that syringe back in your arm or snort that pill. I mean, like it's an amazing thing. Anyways, like it's bizarre. So you've done recovery, you've done a treatment program. You mentioned that you're clean today, and that's really good. And I'm, you know, whenever I talk to anybody who's been in the same shoes I've been, I'm always happy when I hear that they're pulling it through today. How were you treated by general society? We're sitting in a nice little park right now on Somerset. It's really beautiful. We have people around. Some of them are kind of drunk, and that's fine. You know, were you like that, or were you one of those guys who were functional? You showered every day, you brushed your teeth.
I was the very definition of a functional addict. I can honestly say I never panhandled for money to feed my drug addiction. I always worked and made myself suffer and worked and made myself suffer. And I thought, at the time, I thought it was ahead of the game, you know. I see people, I was living on the street, but, you know, I'd go work at labor agencies or I'd go help a friend out. And I really thought back then, because of the addict mentality, that, you know, I was ahead of the curve. And then it got to a point where I just couldn't even keep up anymore, that my body just could not take the abuse anymore. I couldn't get up, work for 12 hours just so I can make enough money so I can go score a pill and then alleviate all those symptoms. It just got to the point where I couldn't even get out of bed anymore without feeling I was going to die.
So society didn't really see you as one of the homeless addicts who are wandering the streets. You took care of yourself enough to get out there and do a job.
Although it was quite embarrassing when, you know, you see friends from back home, people you haven't seen in 7, 10, 15 years, and they look at you a lot different. They try to play it off like they don't, but they do. And I mean, I don't hold it against them. I mean, it was a big shock for a lot of people when they found out that I had problems with drugs. But my general experience, maybe not myself, I didn't get treated too bad, but I mean, you've met my older brother.
Yeah, I know you very well.
He deals with it on a daily basis. And I'm with him, and I see people, they'll see me, I'll be walking with them, they'll give him a funny look, but they'll give me even more of a funnier look, because why is this guy hanging out with him? And, you know, there's a large part of me that just wants to get right in their face and be like, Why do you have to look down on myself or on my brother? I don't understand. You don't know who we are. We're just someone on the street. And it's really unfortunate that addicts have this stigma about them, that every addict out there is completely hopeless. They're just bums. They're just a leech off of society. That could not be further from the truth.
Well, I had to break that, you know, but there's a lot of people who monopolize. Manipulate the society and the services out there. That's the curse of the addiction. We do what we have to do to survive.
Agreed.
Yeah, you know, and to say that they're victims, they're not. They are who they are. And I can say that because I am one of them. I still consider myself one of them. You know, not because I'm actively using, but because I see them on a daily basis, and I work with them. So it's part of. Yeah, and again, I'm not trying to take away from what you're saying. No. You're right. You're absolutely right. Society, you know, there's a stigma when they see an addict, they automatically assume you're just a bum wasting your life, you know. But there's a reason why we're addicts. You know, there's a reason why. It's not like we decide one day to say, you know something, I want to smoke crack for the rest of my life until I die, or I want to be an alcoholic and I want to sit behind the shepherds of the Salvation Army and waste away, you know, or I want to sell my body to support my habit.
No one makes that conscious choice.
Exactly. But society doesn't care. As an outreach worker, that's my primary job. I see how society treats people. I also see how, you know, our police department treats people. I'm hoping that you weren't abused by the cops. Sadly, most addicts I've ever met have had a lot of problems with our police department, and that doesn't have to be Ottawa. It could be Vancouver, it could be Toronto, it could be Montreal. You know, I mean, anywhere in Canada, you know, where there's a problem with street people with addictions, you know, our police departments, you know, are, it's their job basically to clean the streets up at any cost. What are your views on that?
I've never been to jail personally, but my older brother has spent a lot of time there. I do know a lot of people, and they all tell me the exact same thing, that a jail for an addict does nothing for them. If, you know, like you were saying before, if people want to focus on, you know, building all these prisons and all that, and they really want to do something about the problem, how about getting better programs in prison? You know, how about when better programs when they get out of prison? Halfway houses are fine and dandy, but from what I've seen from personal experiences with friends who are in and out of, you know, jail and prison all the time, they don't do enough to re-educate and reintegrate people back into society. They figure spending a year at a halfway house, making them go to a couple of meetings a week or something like that, is going to fix the problem. That's not going to fix the problem. What you have to do, at least in my opinion, and what happened with me and why I was able to make a recovery, is that I got rebuilt from the ground up.
Why?
My worker, actually, my addictions counselor, I'll just give his first name. His name is Chris. And that guy saved my life because he was a former heroin addict himself. And he didn't pull any punches with me. And he told me that I wasn't going to be able to BS him. I wasn't going to be able to make any excuses for anything, that I was going to have to be accountable for everything. And the biggest thing, though, is to be willing to get stripped down to bare bones and then to be built back up again. A lot of people have this general idea that when someone goes to treatment and that they come out, they're supposed to be cured. No, that's just the first step. You know, basically what Chris told me was his job wasn't to hold my hand. His job was to show me a path, and it was up to me to walk that path. He would be there if I was going to start teetering and tottering, and yes, I still keep in contact with him. We still email back and forth every few months, but, you know, and that's exactly what he did. He didn't hold my hand or anything. He was brutally honest with me. I was never able to push blame onto someone else or onto something else. I basically had to, I made myself accountable for everything that I did. And I mean, I never stole or anything like that, but by the end, I wasn't a very, very good person. I wasn't a very nice person either. And people who know me now and who know me back then, I wear my heart on my sleeve. So for me to go from being this person who was willing to do anything for everybody to being nothing but about myself was insane.
Just a little bit of insight into one of the many faces addiction can take on. You're listening to Pete Street Beat here on CHUO 89.1 FM. And in our final segment for today, Pete and his guest Jay talk about the bigger half of the recovery puzzle, including their issues with the recovery process and how to handle life after you get clean.
You talked about, like, you know, it's only the first step. You know, treatment centers, detox is just the first step. When you did the treatment, wherever it was, you were there for 6 months, which is really cool. Most programs are 28 days. I call them the wonder cures. Then there's the recovery houses that are 3 months and 6 months, and those are all great. But they're teaching you stuff that's, I guess, important to a point, in my opinion. And this is all about how I feel about the treatment programs out there. You know, they teach you about, you know, how chemical imbalances with the addiction. You use a lot of drugs, it makes your brain go funky, right? they teach you about the steps, like they're in NA or AA, they have step works, you know, step 1 through 12. But for me, and I've done treatment numerous times, and I could never sort of stay clean, and I found out why. I figured out in my own eyes, why it never worked, is they never taught us life skills. You know, those simple things like how to cook for yourself, or how to budget, mm-hmm. how to go and buy groceries, or pay rent. Simple life skills.
They should be teaching this in high school.
Yeah, but we're talking about people who are, right now, we're focusing on the people who are out there who go into treatment, and they relapse because they've been there for 30 days or 6 months or wherever it is, and there's no life skills treating you. They're not, most treatment centers, they do not teach you how to take care of yourself when you're on your own. When you're in the centers and you're in the treatment programs, it's all taken care of. You know, you do some homework. You learn, you know, the steps, and you learn how to, you know, do program and go to meetings and get a sponsor, and that's all good. It's all really good and really important. But when you walk away from that place, they tell you, now go to meetings, you know, get a sponsor, and do aftercare. They don't say, pay your bills, get a job, you know, do life on life's terms. That for me personally, should be the most important key ingredient to getting clean.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's a sad thing. Now, again, you know, I'm not a drug counselor. I've taken courses at UBC. I've taken courses at Algonquin. I've taken courses at Herzing College. I have background from the streets. I've been in treatment centers. I've been in, like, you know, 7 or 8 treatment programs over my years, and I never managed to stay clean until this time around. And that was because I left Billy Buffett's House of Welcome, and I moved into someone's house who basically taught me how to survive, and I was really grateful, and I'm grateful to this day. Do you think, as an addict, you know, maybe, well, you've managed to stay clean, and that's really good, but you've done the treatments, and you've seen people like your brother who struggle on a daily basis just to sort of get their head straight, you know? Do you think life skills of some sort, where they teach you how to be, you know, a citizen, would that benefit them?
Absolutely. I think that should be right up there with, you know, how to, you know like you were saying before, when you're inside a center, everything is great because there are set rules and boundaries and things like that. But when once you leave, no matter how much support you have at an NA meeting or AA meeting, you're on your own. And that's where 95-98% of people fall flat in their face, is because they really feel like they're alone, and they are. So I absolutely agree with you. I really think that there should be some type of life skills, aftercare, call it whatever you want, but teach someone to be a normal, quote-unquote, normal person in society. Absolutely. You know, how to budget so you can save up for pay your rent, pay your bills on time, how to do your taxes, when you get frustrated with things, you know, you have the right people to talk to. I mean, you're not going to go talk to someone about problems with paying rent. You're not going to go talk to your AA sponsor about that.
So you're supposed to.
You're supposed to. Again, for me, I couldn't agree with you more. It was one of the things that I noticed when I got out, is that I had a bunch of tools, but I didn't know what to do with myself afterwards. So I remember that.
Thank you to CHUO in Ottawa for contributing that segment to this year's Homelessness Radio Marathon. We are in the second hour of our 15-hour broadcast, as it's around 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. CFRC Radio in Kingston, Ontario, is the host of this year's marathon, and we wrapped up our open mic at Martha's Table, a local food provider, around 5:30. We'll move now to an hour-long live segment from Guelph, Ontario. The station is CFRU. Enjoy.